Tonight we continue looking at Paul's letter to his protege Timothy as he leads a new church. Let's share in God's good word together. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. You may be seated. You are richer than you think. Any of y'all feel rich tonight? Like jumping up and down, yes, I feel so rich. The thing is, rich is an art. And the thing is, it's more and more difficult to do well. The more you have, the more you have to manage. The more you worry about it, the more you have to lose. Last week, we began this series and we looked at the power of the early church. And the power of the early church was a no-strings-attached generosity. If you look at the book of Acts chapter 2, and particularly verses 40 to 47, what you find there is the first church, and these folks cared for everyone who had need. It was a beautiful thing. And thousands of people came into the faith very quickly. The power of the early church was no strings attached generosity. That's what we looked at last week. Now, last week I promised you that we would sort of build on these themes so that you would know what kind of a church you're a part of and what kind of church we hope to be and ways that you can participate in that. So in this year, we will give away roughly $200,000. Out of this little church up here in North Edmond, we're going to give away roughly 15 to 20% of the income that comes in through the church, and we're going to give this out to people all over the world. Here in Edmond, at places like Hope Center Regional Food Bank, all kinds of things like that, as well as around the globe to United Methodist Ministries, as well as Living Water, providing clean water for people that don't have it, literally saving lives around the world. So that we'll do that just this year. But last week, I promised that I would let you know what we've done in previous years as well. This isn't just sort of a one-hit wonder sort of thing. So since 2011, this church, your church, has given away $837,000, more than that actually, with no strings attached, and just in the last 5 years. This is amazing, and so you can get the sense that by the time we get to 10 years out of the lifetime of church, this is going to be well over $1 million. Out of your church, what you're doing. This is wonderful. We want to celebrate that, and we do. And so I hope you feel good about that. I feel awesome about that. It's wonderful. Clearly, we've got wonderful, generous folks around here. But the thing is, many of us don't think of ourselves as wealthy or as rich. So if you have your sermon notes, I'd like to take those out. And these sorts of things that we've been talking about over the last week or so are actual things that help hold our hearts in line with God, where we trust God. And one of the things that's just a core belief around here is that we understand ourselves to be a pass-through account. We don't have endowments at our church. We don't have big savings accounts. We understand that when you give, we take it and we send it. We're simply a pass-through, like an airport is meant to send people out into the world, right? No, the airport's not a destination. So in the same way, a church is not a destination. It's a pass-through where you come, get empowered, learn what you need to learn, and then go bless the world. That's true with our finances. It's also true with our people power. So as a way of introduction tonight, as we expand on this concept of what is it to be rich and how do you live into that, one of the things we just sort of have to own is that we get nervous when we start talking about being rich. Anybody just wants to be like, hey, I'm rich, come see me, I'm a rich person. When I talk to rich people, they don't like to talk about it. They get kind of wonky, kind of weirded out, like, no, I don't want anybody to know. Even when people give to the church sometimes, we'll sometimes get some really wonderful gifts, and people will say to me, now, don't tell anybody that I gave that because I don't want to be on anybody's mailing list. You know, I don't want to be just worn out by everybody because they know that I actually have some means. And so let me know if this is true for you. For me and for most of the people I know, rich simply means this. It's the person who has more than I do. Isn't that rich? If I ask you, are you rich? No, I'm not rich, but I know somebody who's rich. It's the person that makes more than I do. Isn't that true for you? And so what I find is if you extrapolate this out to all the world, you know what you'll find? That nobody's rich and everybody knows somebody who is. Right? I mean, how's that possible? That nobody's rich, but everybody knows somebody who is because there's somebody that makes more than you do or has more than you do or has inherited more than you have. And so around here, it's really easy. We now have a professional basketball team, and I was on Facebook last night, and you know what I found? Kevin Durant's house is up for sale. Did you know this? Kevin, 50% off. I'm looking into it. You know, yeah, you should laugh. That's laughable. This is Kevin's house. You go on Facebook, 50% off, friends. It's great for tall people, right? It'd be a waste for Chantel and I, but I mean, if you're tall, I mean, look at the layout. I mean, you see how much headroom you've got there? I mean, this is rich, right? Because if you can build whatever 15-foot ceilings, you know, and then you go to the bedroom and, you know, lays out like this, that's rich, right? And then, of course, after you've slept a while, you got to stretch and, you know, go to the pool and backyard. Now, this isn't that far from here. This is just over in Galardia, right? So you can, it's a deal, friends. You know, just go get Kevin Durant's house. Now, that when you think of that, that's rich, right? You think of NBA stars or football stars or more than we have, right? So this is rich. But I also want you to know that when I was living in roughly 1,000 square feet with no pool and no big furniture and any of that, I traveled to Rio Bravo, Mexico to build a home. The home is smaller than the stage, by the way. The first home the person ever lived, that's me in the scrubs. My friend Paul gave me his scrubs so that you basically get the La Mesa and you put it together. There's me and some kids up in the corner, and there we are blessing the house when it's finished. That's a finished house, friends, in Mexico. That is a very, very nice house in Rio Bravo, Mexico for them. Blessed by God. It was the first house that the mother and her six children had ever owned or lived. They had all her life. She was in her 40s. She was older than I was at the time. They had basically gotten a couple of road signs that had fallen down and made it sort of a lean-to, and that's what they lived in her whole life. Now, even this, the first home that she ever had that your church built, we've built six of these in Rio Bravo, Mexico, for homes for people who have never had a home. But even so, there's no running water. It has a dirt floor. And they didn't have any money to furnish it. And there's no infrastructure. There's no toilets, raw sewage. It's hard, friends. So when I was there in this old, horrible, beat-up 15-passenger van that was donated from another church, we somehow made our way down there, right? It wasn't safe. I don't recommend it, but we did it back in the day when I was young and more risk-taking than I am today. You know what they looked at us, and you know what they said? Wow, you're so rich that you could, like, not work for a week and come down here and pay for the house that you could give me a house that's rich. I mean, you see how rich you are? You see, so the thing is, if I look at Kevin Durant's house, I don't feel rich. And when I look at her house, I feel rich. When I look at our church and we're able to actually give someone a home and then two homes and then four homes and then six homes in 3 years, that's rich. But to be able to provide water, clean water that'll save lives all over the world, that's incredible. You see, so the reality is this. Compared to some people, some of us are rich in this present world, right? Some of us are. But it's actually deeper than that. You might say that compared to many people, many of us are rich in this present world. Or, I mean, I know that I'm messing up your blanks here, but I mean, you might as well just say that compared to most people, most of us are rich in this present world. We are. That's just the truth about us. But we don't feel that way, do we? We don't feel like that. We feel like Kevin's rich. We're not rich. Kevin's rich. But the book on us, friends, is this. This is what Paul says to those of us who are rich. He says, command, not just suggest, not hope so. He says, command those who are rich in this present world, that's you and me. That's you and me, right? To be generous and good, ready to share. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, dude, you don't understand. We are struggling to make it. We are struggling to make it. Don't you understand? This is fall break, and we're here at church. That means we're the poor people. All the rich people are traveling, right? We are the poor people. Just look at Facebook. They're at Disney World and New York and L.A. and Europe. And we're the poor people. We're here on fall break. Are you kidding me? Don't preach to me about being rich, right? I'm preaching on fall break. I'm so poor. I got to be here working. I'm poor. Except that if you make $48,800 a year or more, you are in the top 1%. 99% of the people in the world have less than you do if you make $48,800 a year. You understand this? You are the very wealthiest people on the planet. And actually, that's skewed a little low. All you have to do is go to Global Rich List. You can do it now on your phones. I hope you don't. It'd be a little rude. But you could. And the screen's going to pop up like this. And it says, what is your income? And if you put in 48.8 in U.S. dollars, you can do this anywhere in the world. Another screen is going to pop up. And it's going to calculate it. And you're actually in the top 0.33% of wealth in the world. And then if you put your wealth in there, you can see that you'd be the 19,911,303rd richest person on the planet. Now, that may not seem much to you, except there's 7 billion people on the planet. And billion's a big number. If you make 48.8, you are in the top 0.3% of wealth in the entire planet. You understand this? Now, I know some of you are thinking, you're like, I hope he doesn't find out I make twice that. All you got to do is put in your number. You might be surprised. Most of you will have a zero after the point. Not kidding. You really will. Now, the question is, and see, I knew this was going to happen. I really thought maybe the third row was going to jump up like, honey, we're rich. Did you know it? Pastor says, we're rich. I'm celebrating. But it's weird, isn't it? It's weird that over time, comparison sucks out your soul. Because you look around you and you're like, man, I don't feel rich. Right? It's that other person. I really do hope you'll go to Global Rich List. I love doing that. I've been going to Global Rich List for the last 15 years. And whenever I'm really feeling bad about our situation, you know, just feeling squeezed, just go to Global. I'm like, man, I'm doing the deal. I'm top 1%. I'm top 0.3%. So are you. So are you. It's amazing. Matter of fact, even people on welfare in our country are in the top 10%, top 5%. You just need to understand that. The poorest people in our country are some of the richest people in the world. So if you're going to follow God concerning wealth, friends, step one is admitting that you are indeed rich. That's true with all the A's, by the way. You have to first admit that something's going on with you. And until you realize that you're rich, it's really hard to learn how to do it better, how to live into it, how to walk out this art of being God's blessing in the world. Because if you don't understand that you're rich, you really want to start holding on to that which you have because you don't feel rich. But by the way, friends, only rich people worry about holding on to what they have. Poor people don't have anything to hold on to. So if you're worried about losing what you have, that means you're rich. You understand this because you actually have something to lose. Right? The poor don't worry about losing what they have. They don't have anything. It's the rich that has that problem. So wealth has some side effects, and we just need to own this. This is what Paul was telling Timothy early on. Number one is this, that rich people confuse being rich, right, with feeling rich. And you can be rich without feeling it. That's true for most of us. When was the first time that you ever felt rich? Can you remember that? You remember feeling rich ever in your life? I remember it well. I was about 6th, 7th grade. I had invested in a lawnmower from my grandmother on my dad's side. She was well known to be one of the most frugal ladies on the planet. So even though she had two or three mowers, she didn't give that to her grandson. She made me buy it. So I bought for $200 a red Toro self-propelled lawnmower. It was an upgrade from the one I'd gotten from the junkyard. I was really struggling through this family. They kept fertilizing their lawn. It was just killing me. It was very difficult. And so I was working this off. And so most of my lawns were about $10. I had one wonderful preacher's wife gave me $11, 10 to spend, one to give a tithe on. And so she gave me 11. And I was like, well, shouldn't you give me like 11 and a dime? She's like, quit it. I was like, okay. But that was normal for me. But there was this one family, they were super rich. And they had this beautiful Irish setter. They had nice cars. They had the Circle Drive. It was a two-story house. They had the columns. It was awesome. They paid me $25 a week to mow their lawn and bag it and edge it and trim it. I mean, and it was about 4 hours of work. I mean, it was hard work to bag that up and haul it off and do the whole thing and, you know, dodge their Irish setter as I was moving along, the whole thing. $25. And at that time in the 80s, you could get a boombox for about $50. That's two mows. All the others, it had to take five mows, but this only had two mows. And I could get cassette tapes, you know, and all sorts of things and listen to all my different music. And I mean, this one, I was rich. I felt rich in seventh grade because I could buy whatever I wanted. If I wanted, I mean, because what do you really want at seventh grade in the 80s? Right? There was nothing to have except maybe a cassette tape that cost you $10. Well, you could do that. Mow a lawn, you could get 2.5 cassette tapes. Woo! I was rich. And the reason was I didn't have any expenses. Guess where I lived? At home with my parents. I didn't pay, you know, life insurance, car insurance. I didn't have a car yet. You know, my bike was paid off. I was paying on the mower. I was tithing and saving, and I was rich. You see, what I found out then is that margin, not money, is the key to feeling rich. The other thing you might say like this, if you want to be rich, just go home, move in with your parents. I'm not suggesting that. But you understand it's about the margin, not the money. Because you can have a lot more money, but not have any margin because you're leveraged. Your house poor. Your car poor. You have expenses, and you don't ever feel rich because of the choices you've made. And there you are, and you get stuck. You don't feel rich at all because you don't have any margin. You have plenty of money, you just don't have any margin because it's already spoken for. And so the trick really is around margin. You can feel rich again. And the secret is this. The secret is to downsize until you feel rich. I mean, think about it. If most of us could live in half of the square footage we live in, easily, and then you know what you can do when you do that? Eat out wherever you want. Seriously, right? I mean, you cut your house payment in half, go out to dinner every night if you want to. I don't necessarily recommend it, but you could for most people. You cut, if you downsize, until you feel rich. You're looking at me like I've lost my mind. What? You mean I don't have to be worried about our finances? No, you don't. But what I find is that most people are in a house that is absolutely sucking the joy out of their life because they don't need it. Most of us have a junk room, right? That room that you don't really use and know what to do, and so all your stuff goes in there never to be seen again until you have to go rent off-site storage for the rest of your stuff. You know, but you feel poor because you have to pay it. So poor that if things don't change, you might have to mow your own lawn in a couple of weeks. Right? Poor. Hurting people. So we confuse being rich with feeling rich. And it's the margin, friends. It's not the money. So wealth side effect number two is this. And this is the problem, is that rich people are plagued by discontent or discontentment. Okay, poor people don't have the same kind of problems with this. Rich people, you have something, then you want a little more, then you want a little more. It's about our appetites. And what we find is that the more people have, what happens? You know this. The more they what? I didn't even have to fill them in for you. Yeah, the more people have, the more they want. That's exactly right. You know this. This is the human condition. This is just how we are wired. Because the more you feed an appetite, the more it grows. It doesn't diminish. I just feel bad for people who are about to go on a diet. You know these folks who are like, they've got this weight loss challenge or whatever, and they eat this huge meal right before they try to lose weight. Do you know what happens when you eat a huge meal? Your stomach expands, right? It expands. And that means when you don't feed it and it's expanded, you're more hungry. So if you want to not be hungry, if you want to kill an appetite instead of feed an appetite, you have to actually feed it less. And then your stomach shrinks. And then you eat less. If you fast for 2 or 3 days and you try to eat a big meal, you can't. You can't keep it down because your stomach has shrunk. This is true. I mean, you can just try it at home. Don't eat for 3 days and then go get a big 72-ounce steak. It won't go well, right? But you eat more, eat a little more, your stomach gets big, and then you're hungrier. You're hungrier, and that's true in every area of your life. And so you don't ever feed your appetite. You diminish it unless you want to just continue to have to feed the appetite, and that's true in all sorts of areas. And so the problem is this, friends. If we're not careful, I mean really careful, we will slide into this demise. We will slide into this morass of, oh, I'm so poor. I'm here on Friday night on fall break. You know. And he's talking about money. So mean. If we're not careful, friends, we will become the richest people on earth who feel poor. You understand how jacked up that is? That you're the top 1% of wealth in the world, and you can sit here and be miserable about how poor you are. And we can all fall in that trap. Now, this is the reality of the world wealth chart, okay? You notice in red, that's folks in U.S. dollars, $100,000 and over. The United States alone and North America has half of the world's wealth, half of it. Everybody else lives on the other half. Do you understand this? That Australia and the United States and Western Europe, that's where the money is. And then basically, for people living on under $5,000 a year, basically, parts of South America, Africa, Asia. It's nowhere close, friends. 0.33% if you're at 48,000. I would remind you, average household income around here is more than 100,000. It's more than twice that. You're not just the top 1%. You're top point something, something percent of the world's wealth. Now, I know you feel bad because your earrings are scratching your iPhone. I know, hey, you got problems. I know you do. I know. You got to watch that. Got to buy the extra screen deal. Or, you know, you remember you get hungry, but you know, you brush your teeth. You're like, I can't eat now. I've brushed. I mean, these are real problems we have around here. Or our kids are just having the time of their life, you know, just struggling. I mean, I feel you. It's hard up here. It's hard. I know you want me to be more pastoral, help you with this stuff. Friends, I would remind you that the early church said that, particularly those who would go to the monastic communities, they said, look, you have to swim from this culture like a man is swimming away from a sinking ship, or it will suck you down with it. I mean, think about this. Have any of you all been miserable about money in the last month? I have. Haven't you? The top 1% wealth in the world. And I'm like, boo-hoo-hoo. Boo-hoo-hoo. How am I going to pay for my kids' college? You know. College, that's a concept that's only for the rich, by the way. Right? I mean, only the ultra-wealthy get to do extended education than the world standard. Right? So here it is. Wealth side effect number 3. We just move on. You get that. And that is the problem of the upgrade. Do y'all ever upgrade stuff? You ever do that? You know, you have one of these? Well, what is that called? What is that? Anybody know what that is? That's an iPhone. Is that a 4? Or is that a 5? Or is that a 6? Or is that a 6 plus? Or is that, you see what I'm saying? Upgrade, upgrade, upgrade. Now, after you get your phone, you got to get the car that goes with it because it has to be Bluetooth, you know, compatible. And the thing is, you got to upgrade your car. Now, I'm told, I know none of us would do this, but I'm told there are people that actually drive a perfectly good working vehicle onto a car lot. And then they talk to someone at that car lot and they give them money and leave their car there. And what they get in return is another car with some less miles on it. Can you believe people do that? I mean, that's rich. They have so much money, they don't have anything else better to do with their car, with their money, than just to upgrade and turn in a perfectly good car. Can you imagine somebody do that? They have a new phone, a new car, and they're poor. They feel poor. Or you know, the mean streets of Edmond, you better get a gate. Because in my neighborhood, we don't have a gate. And you know what happened this week? I got this in my newsletter. I did. This lady put in 26 flats of pansies, and a deer ate them. Uh-huh. Deer, watch out, man. They'll eat your pansies. I mean, you better get a gate, right? It's bad up here. Deer eating season. Woo. I mean, bad, bad, bad. Watch it. True story. See? We have this upgrade. And so Timothy, again, he's like, well, Paul, what do I do? I've got rich people in my church. What do I do with them? And he says, well, command them. Command them who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, right? Because that happens as we get wealth, right? Not to put our hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. It is. That's one of the things that I get to see as a pastor is, you know, I have rich people dying in a hospital and I have poor people dying in the hospital. Their money's not doing a lot of good there if they get into a hospital, right? It's uncertain. It doesn't really help you. But the thing is, if we're not careful, sometimes we think, have you ever had this? You know, you're in a circle of friends, and then one guy's talking, and then everybody's kind of like looking at that guy or that lady as if they're smarter than everybody else, and then it dawns on you, oh, that's the person that has the most money in that group. And somehow we confuse being smart with being wealthy as if they're synonymous. They're not. Some people are smart and wealthy. Some people are smart and in education, which means they're not wealthy. Some of the smartest people I know are some of the poorest people I know because they're professors at a college. That's true. But somehow we can become arrogant that somehow, like have you ever been at the gym and you're working out and you're feeling good about yourself and somebody comes in street clothes trying to ride the treadmill or walk a treadmill in street clothes? What are they thinking? Right? I mean, just like, what are you doing? You can't wear a button-up shirt and walk the treadmill. you know, get your dry fit on. What are you doing? That's not right. You're busting my chill. What, you know, killing me over here. You see how this works? We become arrogant over nothing. That somehow the Lord has blessed us or our family has blessed us, and somehow it's not just that it's okay, that we somehow think we're better than because we have more. And that's absolutely out of bounds in our faith life. This is not okay. It's not who we are. Okay? It's so uncertain. So wealth has side effects four is this. If we're not careful, that arrogance leads us to believe that we actually have some sort of control over our destiny, over our abilities, over the world. Mastery, if you will. So wealth becomes actually a substitute for God. And you say, oh, well, Mark, don't be silly. Don't be silly. Well, let me ask you this. I've got two phrases for you. I'll just throw them out here. One is this. There is no God. That chill down your spine into your bone like there's no God. Or like, yeah, I've heard that before. Or this one. You have no money. Which affects you more? That's your God. Right? I mean, there is no God. That's a possibility. Or you have no money. That's a possibility. Which one scares you more? Well, that's a problem, isn't it? You see, Jesus talks about money more than anything else, more than heaven or hell or angels or men or women or anything else. He talks about money because it is the only real competitor for your soul and for your heart. That's why he says where your money is, there your heart will be also. Right? I mean, seriously, are any of you all come to church today and go, man, following Satan, following Jesus? I wonder. You know, most of us don't struggle with that at all, but we do struggle with how am I going to spend the money that God's given me on things that God wants or things that I want. Now, that's a different deal that we really do struggle with. And it's bit by bit by bit by bit. It's about our heart, about who owns our heart. Where's our heart? Who do we love, really? It becomes a substitute for God. Now, a different way to ask it would be this. How much money would you need to secure your future against all imaginable eventualities? I want you to think about all the things that could happen. How much money would you need to keep that from happening? Well, I know the answer, actually. I don't know all of you very well, but I know the answer. It's this, more than you have. Isn't it? Isn't that true? It's more than you currently have. If you think about all the bad stuff that can happen in the world, you need more money than you currently have. The wisdom literature of Proverbs says it like this. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They think, oh, I just have enough, then I'll be okay. And they imagine it as a wall or as an unscalable wall, too high to scale. And you understand this, that when you have wealth, you think, well, I need this much. Well, no, well, if that happens, then I'll need that much. Well, if I'm going to bless the kids, they need this much. If I'm going to bless my grandkids, then I need that much. Right? And it becomes an end to itself. Andy Stanley puts it this way, and I think he's exactly right. He says, when wealth becomes your hope, you feel compelled to hoard. Because you're holding on, because that really is your strength, that really is your hope, that's really what you're betting on, is your stuff, not God. When wealth becomes your hope, you feel compelled to hoard. And you say, well, Mark, you know I don't hoard. We're not hoarders. I've seen that show. That's not me. And then I walked into my own closet, and you know what I found? I found work clothes. Then I had workout clothes. Then I had after work clothes. And I even had my work in the yard clothes. Do y'all have that? Yeah, you have that. Right? My work in the yard clothes is up here. They fit funky. But, you know, I've got them. Those are my work in the yard clothes. If you have work clothes, workout clothes, after work clothes, work in the yard clothes, guess what? You're rich. So am I. We are. Embrace it. It's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with being rich. If we're willing to share. If we're willing to be people of blessing. It's a good, wonderful thing. And if you have all those different kind of clothes, you're right there with me. I got those clothes. I've even got clothes of different sizes of when I'm little and when I'm big. You might too. I'm told that some women have more than 7 pairs of shoes. Maybe it's true. I mean, I know I'm meddling now, right? I mean, 7 pairs. Imagine you imagine somebody might need more than a different pair every day. Maybe. So Paul writes this to Timothy. He says, teach people not to be arrogant, not to put their hope in their wealth, which is so uncertain. Put their hope in what, friends? In God. And God. Now, I would say it to you like this. If you ever have the choice, and you do tonight, to have the choice between choosing the gift or the giver, choose the giver. for your own sake. Choose the giver. If you've got the golden goose, don't take the egg, take the goose. Right? Hunt, our hope is not in the gift. It's not in the wealth. It's not in our present situation. It's in the giver of life. Choose God. Choose the giver. And so Paul writes it this way. He says, put their hope in God, who richly what? Provides. That's where our hope is. God who will provide everything that you need for your enjoyment. God wants you to have a good life. God is for you, always for you, never against you, always for you. He is. You don't have to worry about God. God is for you. So receive Him. Bless Him. Turn your heart towards Him, not the gifts. Don't worry about the gifts. Worry about the giver. Enjoy the giver. Give your heart to the giver. Because we have this choice, doesn't we? Are you going to have your hope in God? Or are you going to have hope in the gifts, in wealth? And the thing is, there's this migration, isn't there? The wealthier you become, the more your hope is in the wealth and no longer in the giver of the wealth. And then it's a trap. So the question really is, has your hope migrated from God, the giver of the gifts and the wealth? Or is it the more you have, the more your hope is really in the gift? So you might ask it this way, why hope in riches when you can hope in the one who richly provides? Right? That's a different way of asking it. And so the summary of all of this, friends, is really this. Don't be arrogant. It's good for all of us. Right? Judge not, lest ye be judged. Don't be arrogant. Two, don't put your hope in wealth, because that comes and goes. Right? If you have money in the market, you know that. You've seen that. It goes up, it goes down. It goes up, it goes down. Right? Don't be arrogant. Don't put your hope in wealth. Put your hope where, friends? In God, the giver of all good gifts. All good gifts. And so, as we close tonight, I want to invite you to try something with me. One is just to remember this. That as we get older, and you hear this your whole life, I did, I certainly still do, and that is that you need to be good savers. And that's true. I mean, that's just wise to have money in savings. That's smart, okay? But if you're not careful, what people will tell you is that the more you save, right, the more secure you are, the safer you are. Well, kind of. But here's the thing. You cannot save your way to safety. You just can't. You can't. We're mortals. We're not gods. We're mortals. You can't save your way to safety. You can't build a wall high enough to protect you. You can't. So as a way to learn that you're going to be okay, that you can trust God and not the money, I invite you to try this. Chantel and I have done this before. It's really quite remarkable. And that is choose a day this month. You could choose it this week to spend $0. Spend nothing. For us, in a season of life, it was every Tuesday. We simply said, we're not going to spend a dime on Tuesdays. We're just not going to. People say, well, how do you have to. No, you don't. You get your gas on Monday. You make your peanut butter and jelly sandwich on Monday. You get your chips on Monday, or however you want to do it. But you just say, we're not spending any money on Tuesday. And you and I found nobody has died in America from not spending money on a Tuesday. Remarkable. Life just kept on going without spending any money. How's that possible? Because God provides. Right? You don't have to spend money to be alive. You don't have to go to the mall to feel better after a bad day. You don't. But you don't ever know that unless you try it. So I want to invite you to actually choose a day this month, this week, to spend nothing, $0. And that will be a way of you saying to the world, saying to yourself, saying to your own soul, that I will not place my hope in riches, because they are fleeting, but I will place my trust in Jesus, who richly provides for me. Okay. Will you say that with me? I will not place my hope in riches, but in Jesus who richly provides. Let's try that again. I will not place my hope in riches, but in Jesus who richly provides. You know, some of the most miserable people I've ever met were people trying to hold on to wealth, trying to have the right relationships with the right people at the right times for the right reasons, putting up with all kinds of nonsense, and the hopes that maybe one day, they are in the will. Some of the most miserable people I've ever met in my life are people trying to stay in the will. Look, if you don't like the people, don't be around the people. Move on. Have a life. Right? You know how crazy that is. I mean, I see people giving up their entire life, being miserable in bad relationships, being abused mentally, physically, emotionally, verbally by people because they think maybe They can get some crumbs from their table. You see how that is to lose your life? To absolutely lose it? Or people who are so steadfast that they're not leaving their neighborhood that they will work 80 hours a week, never see their kids, let their marriage dissolve, and just have things blow apart because they're not leaving the neighborhood. I know one man whose life has been a wreck for 20 years because he always drove a vehicle that he could not afford. His whole life that I've known him, a wreck, because he simply served wealth rather than the Lord. You understand this? Do not lose your life. The Lord has come to save it, that you may have life and have it abundantly. May it be yours tonight. In Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.